The wildfires that tore across the Hawaiian island of Maui earlier this week were the country's deadliest in over a century. So far, over 100 people have been confirmed dead. That number is expected to increase as the remaining two-thirds of the burned area are searched. The town of Lahaina was hit particularly hard with over 2,000 buildings destroyed. It's not known what sparked the fires initially, but a lot of factors contributed to its intensity and spread, including dry conditions, fast-burning invasive grasses, and winds from Hurricane Dora. Our next guest has done research on the interaction between wildfires and the way we develop our buildings and communities around the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the Maui wildfire and the impact of wildfires in general? Do you worry about wildfires and other natural disasters getting worse, maybe, as the impacts of climate change continue to develop? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Volker Radloff is a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Volker, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, you've studied the interaction between people and wildfires over the years. What stands out to you so far about what we know about the spread of these Maui wildfires?
The Maui wildfires were extreme. So the core of the destruction happened about in a two-hour period or so. And the high numbers, especially of life lost, and as you mentioned, over 100 confirmed already, and that number likely to increase. That is something we have not seen for a century or so. But the general condition of the combination of a fire starting in wildland areas, fueled by high winds and then spreading into an urban area, suburban areas, and the houses become fuel, that's something we have seen increasingly in recent years.
Can you talk a little bit more about those conditions in Maui when this fire broke? Again, as you said, we don't know exactly what sparked it. It unfortunately was, it sounds like a perfect storm for the fast spread of this fire.
Absolutely so. And I think it's important to realize there were numerous fires already across all the Hawaiian islands on the days before. So August 4th, the National Weather Service had given a warning of high wildfire risk due to the combination of dry condition and high winds from Dora. And on August 4th, there was already a 30-acre burn on Maui or so that was contained. On Tuesday the 8th, there was a fire on the eastern side of Maui at 12:22 a.m. that was called the Upcountry Fire. That ultimately burned about 1,000 acres, and that a lot of the firefighters were working on that fire when then the Lahaina fire started at 6:37 a.m. There was initially a very small fire, only 3 acres, and by 10 a.m. it was reported that it was contained, that they had with dozers and so forth been able to control it or so. But then it flared up again in the afternoon at about 3:30. By 4:30, high winds and then the embers, little burning pieces or so that the wind carried, had pushed all the way into the heart of Lahaina. By 4:45, an hour later, a lot of the exit roads were closed because of down power lines, because of cars that were burning and so forth, so people could not escape. And then by 5:45, the fire had reached the ocean front, and the Coast Guard is getting these horrifying messages of people in the water. So that's in a nutshell what happened in Lahaina, and it was incredibly fast due to these 80 miles per hour winds. And then as soon as the wildfire started, those embers were blowing into the settled areas, and then the houses themselves became fuel and created more embers that set more houses on fire.
Volker, I think of some types of ecosystems, like in the American West, maybe prairie places where there are quote-unquote natural wildfires, or ecosystems even rely on fire from time to time. As I understand it, in my very limited understanding, this is not true of Hawaii. This is not a place where we see, over the period passage of time, regular wildfires. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, there is no natural wildfires, I mean, that this ecosystem would be adapted to. There may have been fires from volcanic eruption, from occasional lightning or so, but it was not a major part of that ecosystem prior to human habitation or so. So that is different from systems like chaparral in Southern California, or prairie savanna ecosystems in the Midwest, where fires were a much bigger part of the natural landscapes. And that is also important in the Hawaiian context, because the native plants are not adapted to fire. And when fires occur, they are lost. Those ecosystems are replaced by invasive species typically.
So this is a case where some level of human development and human change made wildfires more likely?
Absolutely, yes. And it's both a combination of the changes in the vegetation and the land cover, as well as then the ignitions that happen. And my understanding is also that what caused this fire exactly has not been determined. There's reports of downed power lines, and such power line problems have caused many other wildfires before, but that investigation will take time. And given the amount of destruction and the insurance issues and all that, I'm sure people will be very careful to make exactly sure that they pinpoint the causes exactly. But human ignitions are causing most of the wildfires that lead to the loss of lives and structures. So they are a big factor.
Let's get to something looming here, climate change. Do the impacts of climate change make outbreaks of wildfires likely in more and more places, like in this case, unfortunately, Maui?
The quick answer is yes. And long drought periods certainly are a big concern. In these systems like Maui, where invasive grasses and shrubs are an important part of the fuel, we're also concerned, though, about the combination where we have 1 year with high precipitation, a wet year, which allows a lot of this herbaceous matter to grow. And if that's followed by a dry year, then we have conditions for very large fires or very intense fires or so. So yes, the climate change plays a role, and it plays a role in these drought conditions. And what that has caused across the U.S. is that the fire season is much, much longer, where it used to be several months, and now wildfires occur 12 months of the year. And a few years ago, 21 in Boulder, we had the Marshall Fire in December or so. That was not fire season traditionally, and climate change is certainly a factor in that.
We're talking about the Maui wildfires and the interactions of people, development, and wildfires in general with Volker Radeloff, professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the wildfire in Hawaii or the trend of wildfires in recent years? Maybe an experience where you lived in a community that experienced one. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you just tried to call and didn't get an answer, I think we've got the bugs ironed out there. You could try again, 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Volker Radeloff, professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison, looking at the Maui wildfires, what caused them to be so fast and extreme, and wildfires, people, and climate change. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Kimberly is with us in Pell Lake. Kimberly, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Kimberly?
I just wanted to mention that if they were to trim the trees around their power wires like we do here, 10 feet back, then they wouldn't have been entwined. And if they could have cut off the power to those, knowing that the storm was coming, they could have avoided that explosion of fire. And also, they didn't cut off the electric, but they did cut off the water. And I found that kind of strange.
Kimberly, thanks for the call. I didn't know about the water cutoff. I know fire hydrants had very low pressure, I've been hearing. But Volker, the idea that some management of power lines, including, as Kimberly says, keeping vegetation away, turning them off when there are dangerous conditions imminent, what do you think about that?
Those are definitely good suggestions. Thanks, Kimberly. Yes, so making sure that there are no trees that in a high wind condition can fall on top of the power line and break them and pull them down is highly beneficial. Having said that, that requires more than 10 or 15 feet clearing. That would require in many areas much wider cuts or so. And if at the bottom of the power line there are grasses or shrubs or so, if the power line comes down and is sparking, then fires would still occur. Cutting off power is in high wind condition is good, and it is something that is done in California and so forth, but it also comes at a high cost. That means that people in places where it is hot and dry right now no longer have air conditioning. That has medical consequences for many people. It means that people may not no longer have television and radio to listen to alerts and so forth. So I'm not sure what went into the decision in West Maui not to cut off the power, but it's not a solution that is easily done. As I mentioned, there were at least 4 days of high wind before, and cutting power off for long period or so is difficult or troublesome. In hindsight, of course, yes, had the power been cut off at that point, and if the power lines were indeed the cause of this fire, things would have been much better, and that is true. I should also mention, in terms of the clearing of the power lines, this is becoming a very tricky issue now, because a lot of the companies that have done that traditionally can no longer get insurance to do so, because the insurance companies are saying, if these clearings of the power lines were not done quite correctly enough and a fire occurs, then the insurance payments for that are just way too high or so. So in California, I know that companies, electric companies, are right now struggling to even find contractors to clear trees along the power lines.
Kimberly, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Folker, you've done research on human development, people building in areas that are prone to wildfires, the human-nature interface. What were some of the key things you found as you mapped these things out around the country?
Yeah, so those places are wonderful places to live in. I understand why people like to have their home there. These are places where the houses are close to wildland vegetation, to forests, to shrublands, to grasslands, some of which can burn. And across the U.S., about 30% of all housing units are in what we call the wildland-urban interface. That's the technical term. And we've worked on that issue with the Forest Service for the last 20 years or so, because it is a widespread problem. It makes wildfires a vexing problem. The issue is, first of all, human ignition. We talked about that a few minutes ago. In these places, fires are more likely to start because a barbecue grill topples over, power lines, and all of these issues are more concentrated there. And then when fires occur, it's not just firefighting that has to happen, but evacuations too, and protection of structures and so forth. And that complicates wildfire management greatly.
Let's go back to our callers with Jim in Newport Township, Illinois. Jim, hi.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. You know, I've been to Hawaii several times. It's been a while. My first comment is about the Hawaiian culture, is that they don't get too really concentrated concern about much of anything there. You know, in order to have a fire, there has to be fuel. And even though the hard facts have not been assessed yet, I'm afraid there was just too much fuel in the form of dry vegetation so close to town, and then the perfect storm comes along, and you know the result. I mean,
Jim, so. I gotcha. Thanks for the call. And this is a common ingredient, Folker, I think, in a lot of quick-spreading wildfires, that accumulation, as Jim says, of dried vegetation.
Absolutely. Yes. No, and that is when a drought comes together with high wind conditions. And then in the wildland-urban interface, by definition, we have these wildland fuels close to houses. That is not unique to Hawaii, though. We have these fuel conditions in large parts of California, the Intermountain West. We have it in parts of Wisconsin and the eastern U.S. as well. The Gatlinburg fires of 2016 were exactly the same pattern. I mentioned the Marshall Fire in Colorado and so forth. So that all is common. The invasive species are particularly widespread in Hawaii. About a quarter of Hawaii is covered by invasive species that are highly flammable. And in the past, there was more active agriculture, sugarcane plantation and so forth in Hawaii. That is no longer the case. Those former farm fields or agricultural fields are now covered by invasive species. So managing those fuels, Jim, I totally agree that is wise, that is necessary. That is not a trivial endeavor, though. Those are millions and millions of acres across the U.S., and how to manage them is not always clear. In case of these grassland, livestock grazing could maybe work, things like that, but prescribed burning, for instance, is not an option in those systems. It would just lead to even faster spread of these invasive species throughout the islands.
Thanks a lot for that call. Folker, I've had a couple of great conversations over the years with Stephen Pine, a fire expert who studied fire, its history all over the world. One thing I came away with is there isn't one solution that's going to work in this ecosystem and every ecosystem. The local fire characteristics may be very different from one place to another. Does that make it hard to come up with common solutions?
Very well put. Yes. Ecology is tricky because it's different in every place. And as you said, in Hawaii, we have too many fires and prescribed burning is not an option. in parts of the Sierras in California, we probably could use more prescribed burning, but in Southern California with chaparral, the fires are too frequent already. So the solutions have to be tailored to a given place and both to the native ecosystems, as well as to the settlement patterns and so forth. But I think it has to be a combination of fuel management, as well as thinking about evacuation, thinking about better ways of alerting people or so, and also to some extent, the good old Smokey the Bear campaigns to stop ignitions to avoid in these highly risky situations fires from starting.
And Folker, just briefly, should more communities be doing more fire planning and make whatever that might look like in their community?
Absolutely. And I think community efforts are important. A lot of the vegetation management has to happen on private land or so. This is something that government agencies can help with, but communities and landowners have to step up, and they can do a lot. On average, in a given wildfire across the U.S., if a house is within the perimeter of that fire, it has only an 11% chance of burning. 89% of the houses survive. And a lot of that has to do with how the houses are built, how the vegetation is managed, and so forth. So there are things we can do. But yes, communities need to get together and take initiative.
Folker, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Folker Radloff is a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. He talked to us about the Maui wildfires and human development in general.